Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi there. So, do you want to read manhwa? Well, you came to the right place. Welcome to the fifth episode of So Do You Wanna Read Manhwa, a podcast centered on Korean manhwa and their novel or drama counterparts. In this episode, we'll be talking about Not So Wicked Stepmom. That's S-E-W, so. My name is Amber, and I'll be your host along with my friend Marion. What's up, Marion?
I'm good. How you doing?
All right. Ready to get into this this awesome story.
Awesome. Nice.
Well, before we get into this story, let's catch up on what we've been reading lately. So, what's up with you?
Sure. Actually, just last night, I started a brand new series that just dropped on Tapas. Why Are You Obsessed with Your Fake Wife? And, like, just, you know, just the title is like, okay, I'm interested. So, the description says, Nadia Valajit thought she had nothing more to lose until her family and fiancé betrayed her. After she finds herself thrust back in time prior to the events that ultimately led to her death, Nadia kicks off her plans for payback by marrying Glenn Winterpell, the icy Marquess to the north, and the Valajit family's favorite punching bag. Armed with knowledge of the future, Nadia sets the table to serve up her ice-cold revenge, but she might end up melting the Marquess's heart instead. And yeah, it's basically a regressor story about an illegitimate daughter who ends up being used for political purposes. It's interesting because there's a transmigrator from Korea there who his name is Jiho, and he serves as like a hero, basically. He ends up like slaying a dragon and all that stuff. And basically Nadia's family is one of the dukes, and he ends up, you know, marrying her off to the hero for whatever reason, like to secure political power and stuff like that. And so she ends up getting assassinated once like she serves her purpose. And yeah, I mean, she's armed with the knowledge of like all the stuff that Jiho taught her, because they kind of bonded a bit, as they're both kind of outsiders, him being from like another country and her being illegitimate nobility. So people always look down on her, even the servants. And yeah, it's interesting because while I was reading it, the art reminded me of season two of this one cooking series that's like, I don't remember the title, but it's basically this girl who has blue hair and she gets possessed by someone who like read a story or something. But basically season two, the art changes, and I think it's the same one or the same person drawing the series I'm talking about now. The Why Are You Obsessed with Your Fake Wife? But yeah, it's been a really fun read. I think the fact that she ends up marrying this guy who the Marquess Winterpell, who he absolutely hates the Duke because they're constantly just like at each other's throats. The north and the south of the kingdom that they're in, they're always at odds because I believe the north was conquered like 100 years ago or something, but before that they were independent. So they just don't see eye to eye. And the Duke is basically controlling the Emperor as like a puppet. So yeah, it's like this high stakes political game between these two families. And because Nadia was betrayed by the people she thought she cared, or the people she thought cared about her, she ends up basically allying with their enemy. And yeah, as she does more to like help that territory flourish and get stronger and pay off debts and all that stuff, Marques Winterpil is slowly like kind of falling for her. And it's very gradual. It's not like obvious because he's still skeptical whenever he sees her, because he deducted correctly that the reason that the Duke even agreed to this marriage was because he was trying to plant a spy, obviously. But yeah, I mean, that's how Nadia pitched it to her father. But in reality, what she wants to do is take down that whole family. So it's pretty fun. It's like them kind of dancing around each other, like with their intentions, but they're slowly actually seeing that they have chemistry. So it's fun. I think it dropped with 30 chapters and I'm up to episode 21. So yeah, I think it dropped yesterday or the day before.
And there's already 30 chapters?
Yeah, Tapas usually like dumps like either 20 or 30 chapters for the first release, I guess. Like the week that it debuts.
That's pretty convenient. I think I'm starting to get that you're very much into political romances.
Yeah, basically. I don't know why. I think it's interesting. I'm always, I guess, embroiled in politics because working at a hospital, you just notice shit. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting. I also grew up watching a lot of novellas with my mom because she's Dominican. She watches like Spanish soap operas. So yeah, it was always like in the back of my head.
They're always fun reads though. Mm-hmm. Were there any other series that you wanted to reach out about?
Let me see. I think I had one more. There's one I thought that was interesting called, this is an action series and it's called Surviving the Game as a Barbarian on Webtoon, capital W. And it's basically about a guy who's playing like one of the most notoriously hard like dungeon fantasy games to ever come out in, I think, in like a video game form. And it's just so obtuse. It's one of those games where it's like an NES game where if you don't have a guide, you don't know what the hell you're doing. There's no instructions. There's no guides, nothing to really understand the logic behind what's going on unless you're just like, you're a developer. And this guy, there's this one guy who's just obsessed with this game. And he plays it inside out. He tries like to min-max, do the very best he could to like actually beat it. And at one point, he ends up waking up one day and realizing that he is a member of the Barbarian tribe, which is one of the characters that you can select when you play. It's like it's like an RPG, so there's different classes. And Barbarian is the one that most people think is like pretty stupid, because like you know it's all brawn, no brain, you don't get like that much magic and stuff like that. But because this guy knows how the game works, he's like, oh, okay, this is actually setting me up for the most optimal run. And it's like a brutal game where it's so easy to die because it's so hard and stuff. So it's basically him trying to, he's treating the game like it's real, obviously, because he has no indication of whether or not he's actually in a game, because he doesn't see like, I don't think he sees like any menus or anything. It just, he understands like the mechanics of like how everything works, but he's basically treating it like real life, which he should, because you don't know if you're gonna die or not. And yeah, I mean, it's like 30 something chapters right now. It's 32 with the fast pass, but I read up to episode 20, and seeing him like navigate dungeons and like using his knowledge as like someone who knows the game, like he treats NPCs differently from people who are like adventurers, and yeah, I don't know, it's cool. I think the action is really fun too, because he goes around, instead of being like a typical barbarian where they just wield like giant axes and swords and stuff, he chose his weapon to be the shield, because he wants to make the most out of like his really strong body to like just be a tank and like dedicate himself to that role, so that he can team up with like mages or other like DPS dealers, so that, you know, he figures out that like his way of surviving is to like stick to his role, and that's the role that he picked for himself. So yeah, pretty cool protagonist.
Okay, I have a couple follow-up questions.
Sure.
So first, when you say he knows the game, does he know the game like Doja knows his novel? That's the real question.
Yes. Yes. He is a fanatic. He is the only person in the world who is obsessed enough with this shitty game that everyone else thinks is like really bad to really like dissect it. And I feel like if anyone's going to survive in this fictional badly, quote unquote, badly made world, it's going to be him.
Okay. Okay. And then my other question was, what are the other classes other than barbarian in this game world?
I don't remember. I think one of them is like elf. Wait, let me see. Does it get mentioned in the beginning? I feel like it does.
I know I'm a sucker for like archer elves.
Oh yeah. I love archers.
Goblin Slayer has my number like that, so.
One sec. I'm just going to scroll through the episode at the beginning. Oh, the name of the game, by the way, is called Dungeon and Stone. It's a single-player RPG created by an indie developer with retro 2D pixel art graphics, which is a rarity these days. It only supports English, so he had to teach himself English to be able to play this, because he lives in Korea. But, okay, so...
Dedication.
Yeah. The characters you can select. Human, and he looks like a paladin, wearing, like, armor and a sword and, like a banner, almost, on the front of his body. A dwarf is holding a hammer. Elf is holding a bow. Barbarian is holding an axe. Beast woman. And it looks like a rogue holding like a knife. And then there's a shadowed out character holding what looks like a sword and like a tuft of hair, like a long side anime bang, and then a ponytail. So that looks maybe like a samurai or something. But he always plays barbarian, I think. And yeah, it's cool because you see like in the opening chapters like what the game actually looks like, and it looks like an NES game where there's like text, but then there's like a grid type screen, pixel graphics. Yeah, it was cool. He was.
Are the pixel graph? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I think he was like really frustrated, like because he didn't really understand what was going on, but. As he was like frustrated and stuff, he looked up and he saw the time and it was like, what, 10 p.m. I already spent like 5 hours or something. And then that's kind of how he dives into the rabbit hole.
Are the pixel graphics like only at the beginning, or do they kind of make reappearances throughout what you've seen so far?
I think they make reappearances because there's different times where he enters dungeons and there's like different scenarios or mechanics that he remembers, and when that happens, they show the screen.
All right. Well, it sounds interesting. The recommendations I have today, I'm actually going to change one of them just because you reminded me when you said there was one that you had started like yesterday, I think it was, at mm-hmm. the beginning, the first one that you mentioned. So there's one that I actually started this morning just by chance, and I absolutely am enjoying it so far, even though I've only read like 7 episodes.
Oh, nice.
But it's called Cleric of Decay, and the creator's name is Yu, like Y-U. Mm-hmm. But the summary is, not all job classes are created equal. Marnak was pulled into a game while trying to play as one of the worst job classes, Cleric of Decay. Now he's the only cleric of the Order of Decay, serving a goddess who's been reduced to an animated hand that repeats the word murder. Will the Order's last cleric become powerful enough before the prophecy of the end comes true? That series is on Webtoon, capital W, and it's funny because, like, there's, like it says, there's a hand of this goddess that's attached to him all the time, like Shigaraki style.
Mm-hmm.
And... the hand will just be like saying murder in different forms throughout the thing. It'll have an exclamation point. It'll have some like little angry symbols that pop up. It'll have like murder question mark or just like specific letters and how it reacts to things. And then like once he actually uses his decay powers, he's insanely like overpowered at everything. And he can't die because of this like decay ability. So even though they like behead him very like right off the gate, he just picks his head up and continues on. it's very strange, but it's also hilarious.
I like that thing. Yeah. That like you can't die thing reminds me of this old Tumblr post where it's like it's like a chat, and this guy is saying, "You don't scare me." And then it's like a mushroom responding, like, "I'm above death. I am what eats decay or something, or rot." It was like very ominous, and I'm like, "Yeah, that's what Funkus does."
I mean, that's kind of the attitude he has in this. There's at one point where they're like, "Oh yeah, we killed him," and he's like, "You sure about that, buddy? Like, I'm not really happy you just put an arrow in my skull, but you might want to check that somebody's actually dead before you celebrate." But the other one that I wanted to mention was a short series I enjoyed on Manta. It's called Recipe for Love. It's a contemporary cooking romance. It only had 63 episodes. The original story is by Hosep, adapted by Amato and illustrated by Lim. So the summary for that one is, we're cooking up a scandal. Washed up singer Rosa is at the end of her rope. She's jobless. Her agency is just about given up on her, and her boyfriend is a deadbeat. But what happens when she suddenly is invited onto the reality show Celeb Kitchen Battle? How will she react to meeting her one true love? It's got plenty of like competitive reality show drama, but it's also like a really sweet story between a chef and this like singer that might have her second chance at being a celebrity.
Oh, okay. How long is it?
63 episodes. It's an older series. It's finished. I think it finished last year on Manta.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Yeah, I might queue that up because that sounds like a good debut.
Yeah.
What was it called again?
Recipe for Love.
Okay, got it. Nice. Yeah,
it's cute. Well, before we get into our actual content for today as well, I wanted to follow up with you about Anime NYC because you were there last weekend.
Yes, I was.
I'm sure you've got plenty to say because it sounded like a ton of fun, like everything that you were posting about it.
Yeah, honestly, I was surprised. Most of it, you know, was ORV and Sleepy C related, but just in general, like I had a really fun time. Even though Ash Press was basically like the only presence there in terms of webtoons, I'm friends with all of them. And all the yen people, and like it's always fun just like talking to people that are working in the industry that you know really care about the stuff they're working on, and it's infectious. I really had such a fun time. I got to interview Sleepy C. I missed out on applying for the interview spot because I had some appointments going on, but Mark was able to help me get in and basically just sent in to see what was conducted. Like I didn't get to submit my questions, but oddly enough, there was like a mix up with the contractors that the con hired to communicate between different parties, and the people who were invited to the interview showed up late by like 30 minutes. Actually Deba Oki, she showed up like maybe like 5 minutes after we started, but that's only because me and Mark texted her to show up because it looked like everyone else, they told them to come at 3:30, but it actually started at 3. But all of the approved questions were printed out. We had like printouts for everyone to like follow along. And so, yeah, we had printouts with all of the approved questions that were screened, you know, before choosing the interviewers. And I was there and I introduced myself, and funny enough, I had a card on me. So I handed one to Sleepy C and to her editor, and Juyeon ended up explaining the joke, the pun to them. And once they got it, they all started laughing really hard. Oh man. Cause I ran out of my personal card. So I gave them the Soju podcast one. And yeah, so I sat, I read out the interview questions like in order, and then because I figured like if these people are going to show up, I should just get this going, record the audio, and just hand it to them when they show up, and you know, just look out for each other, stuff like that happens. Someone helped me out with when I had audio issues when I interviewed Rachel Smythe of Lore Olympus, so you know, just returning the favor, you gotta look out for each other. And yeah, that was I think on Friday. Saturday was when we had the Gen and Eyes panels and the Sleepy C panel. So I tweeted about that stuff. I recorded all the footage that I could.
It's okay. You left off Saturday Yan and I's panel.
Okay, yeah. So I was actually recording panel notes as usual because I was freelancing for ANN, like sending my notes and stuff. For I's, I didn't have to, but I did that anyway because it was for the podcast, you know? So yeah, we ended up tweeting and posting that stuff on Instagram. So thank you so much for everyone who was sharing. The Twitter thread blew up. It got like 1K likes. And like one of the first ones to really get to that exposure, I guess, was there was a confirmation that Sing and Song, the author of the web novel, and is like super involved with the production of the webtoon of ORV. So all of the stuff that gets drawn and published, they basically confirm everything. So people were taken like, they were like taken aback. They were like, oh, this changes everything. This means that all of those, the scenes where Junhyuk looks so slutty, it's canon or shit like that. I saw so many comments like that and I'm like, it's not that serious. But it's also,
it could be. I mean, who knows? Oh man.
Yeah, but it was fun. I told Amber to like, you should probably share this on Instagram too, because you know why not? And yeah, people have been noticing, so that's fun. Hopefully they're listening too. But yeah, in terms of like manhwa stuff, that was a lot of it. The ICE press announcements were great. All of that stuff, all those topless titles, like I've been reading all of them since like last year or 2 years ago, or like for in a lot of their cases, like SSS Class, Revival Hunter, Marriage of Convenience, Villains Turns the Hourglass. No, my bad. That was another one. Villains is a Marionette. What else? There was another one. My Secretly Hot Husband. Or yeah, I think it was that one. All of that stuff, like I read them like as soon as they licensed and got dropped, and because Tapas, the reason I read so much on Tapas is because what I was telling you that like they drop like the first batch of chapters is like 20 at a time, and I'm like, okay, yeah, so I'll read, and if I like it, I'll just keep it up. If not, I can just drop it before whatever. Like I can gauge within 20 episodes if I'm gonna be invested or not. Basically, there are times where I've spent the whole 20 episodes and decided to drop it, but whatever, it doesn't matter. It's still fun. Like I'm getting like a good taste of what to expect, so I don't mind.
Yeah, I'd agree that like 20 episodes is a good gauge of if you'll like it or not. I just, like I said last episode, I still have that horrible habit of once I've started it, I have to finish it.
Yeah.
So I envy your ability to drop it.
Oh no, yeah, I've been buying shit for so long that like being a completionist, I just know it is going to destroy me, so I just take a deep breath and stop.
Well, that's that was amazing that you were able to go do all of that panel work at Anime NYC, and as well as like getting to pop in for the interview, even though like you didn't initially have the opportunity. Like that's great. And I am also very amused that they got our pun and kind of like honored by it in a way.
Right.
So hopefully maybe they'll even like reach out at some point and be like, oh, we met you, let's do something. That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think I have spoken to people from Tappy Toon, but you know, we're still nothing really set in stone or anything, but people are aware of us. That's actually pretty awesome. I wasn't expecting that. I might be a nepo baby.
Well, that tweet that Eyes Press retweeted with the like the panel recording, that absolutely blew up. Last time I looked, it was like 147K views.
Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. It was fun. I mean, the presence was like immense. I felt excited because there were so many people cosplaying like Doja and Juhyeon and like just other like manhwas and stuff. I'm like, oh shit, finally, it's like it's here. Like I'm like, I said it last year that yeah, it's here. Webtoons and manhwa are here, but now it's like it's like everyone else is catching up. So it took the publishers first to get here to actually bring the content out. And then like now a year later, it's like, yes, fans are reading and enjoying and participating. So it's cool. It's like a little, it's not a, not trickle down, but like you do see like gradual growth. It's pretty cool.
Can only go up from here.
Yeah. We're here to stay.
Yeah. All right. Well, for what we're actually here about, I guess if you have nothing else you want to mention about Anime NYC, we can go ahead and get started with that.
Okay. I will tease this. There's a potential collaboration going on that we're Soju Manhwa Pod is in talks with Eyes and Yen Press. So stay tuned. I don't know. Well, Amber, if I find out before this episode gets uploaded, I'm just gonna hand it to Tatamala to like insert it here. Okay. But yeah. You guys will find out soon. It's exciting.
Exciting news. All right. Well, for today, as we said at the very beginning, we're going to be talking about Not So Wicked Stepmom. This is a romantasy series with the original story by Iru or Iru. The comic adaptation is by Mo9 Rang. This is a twist on the classic Snow White web series. It's still ongoing at 93 episodes currently in the third season, releasing on Tapas. For physical volume collectors, volume 1 is now available through Eyes Press, with volume 2 available by the time this recording is released. The summary for Not So Wicked Stepmom is that fairy tale stepmothers are notoriously wicked. But after a children's clothing designer is reborn as young Princess Blanche's stepmom, she's determined to break the mold and shower her daughter with love. Now, she decides to convince the girl's cold-hearted father to do the same. In her quest to make a happier home for Blanche, Abigail begins to uncover secrets and schemes within the palace. Will devious forces tear the Friedkins apart, or can Abigail stitch them back together into a family? I am really enjoying this series, just so you know.
Good.
Yes. I have been very much looking forward to it. I really appreciate that both of the leads, both Abigail and Sabrian, at one point both vocalized a support for same-sex relationships. That's something that I don't really see very often outside of like a BL series.
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that. I did also think it was interesting in one of the creator interviews with Iru that they said that this was kind of like spawned out of watching the Maleficent live action movie with Angelina Jolie.
Ooh.
So I thought that was really interesting as well.
Oh, dude. That was the interview from when they came back from season break, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I skipped it because I was like, let's save this for a rainy day. And then I completely forgot.
Well, today's that rainy day.
Yeah, I'll definitely read it.
Yeah, I mean, they basically said that Maleficent was just very interesting in the way that it highlighted a different angle of a story and showed that Maleficent wasn't really quite as evil as people always portrayed her to be in the original Sleeping Beauty story.
Mm-hmm.
And they really liked that aspect of it and wanted to roll with that for this one.
Three dimensionality.
Yeah. All right. Well, so this series is one that you recommended to me. So I want to hear all about your thoughts about it.
Okay. Well, what I like about it is it all stems from Abigail, because I tend to enjoy female leads who, when they have like trauma and they try to like process it or maybe even like avoid it, but in the case of this, where it's like someone taking over someone else's body, basically them trying to like live life a different way, it goes back to like what I like about regressors, where someone's attitude changes once like a life-changing event happens, or like, you know, they get reborn or go back in time, blah blah blah, but like basically they want to live life differently. And you kind of see that in Abigail's attitude, and how, like, yeah, originally the character she's inhabiting is the evil stepmother who, like, bullies the daughter and everything, but she wants, like, a genuine relationship with Blanche and to be, like, an actual mother figure to her. So I think that's really sweet. And whenever characters go out of their way to, like, really pursue their goals and, like, support other people, I think that's really neat. Abigail, the way that she kind of handles herself, she's, like, self-aware about the fact that, like, oh, I look evil. I have this this natural scowl with my eyes that always are, like, sharpened and look intimidating. So I'm just going to try not to lean on that and be polite. And she does see a difference in how people treat her over time. And yeah, like, I think it's satisfying to see someone's character journey when they go through stuff like that. And it shows also with her relationship with everyone else, like how she got Blanche and Sabrian to open up to her. The fact that they're spending time as, like, a family now, where before, due to reasons we're going to get into, Sabrian would, like, ignore his daughter, Blanche, and, you know, they were both pretty hurt by their circumstances and stuff, but Abigail finds a way to really mend their relationship. And, yeah, I love found families and, like, when people become families or, like, grow closer, bond together and stuff like that, it's just, yeah, I like seeing positive relationships. Why not? And the series kind of really exemplifies that.
Yeah, I would agree. The series definitely does not shy away from trauma and intense situations by any stretch of the imagination. But the characters are definitely better for the way that they've dealt with them or are trying to deal with them and how they apply that to their current relationships. I think it's very important that they are very self-aware as far as what they've gone through. Abigail is still working on a lot of her, I don't want to say issues per se, but, like, the traumatic things that she has had to deal with and how she needs to rebuild her self-confidence in a way too. That's still, like, an ongoing thing for her character.
Yep.
But outside of thinking of herself, like, she is a huge fighter for the other characters in the series and standing up for them and their needs. And I think that's a very good thing to see in a main character, and that I've really enjoyed throughout the entire reading of it so far.
Yeah. She's, like, probably one of the greatest allies you could have in terms of just, like, people you know who are going to come through for you. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we've been talking about them a little bit, but the, I guess, main four characters that we really will talk about a lot in this episode, first is Abigail Friedkin, formerly Lily Lee. So Lily Lee was a Korean woman who was a clothing designer for children. She dies. I don't remember if it was, what kind of accident it was. I don't know if you remember.
I don't.
Okay.
Okay.
She dies in some mysterious accident.
And I feel like the options are either, like, car accident or, like, tragic sewing accident. Usually that's how it goes with these kind of series.
Again, I get it. Right. That's usually how it goes. I will absolutely blame Truck Coon because I don't remember. But so once Lily dies, she goes into Abigail's body, who had also died due to some sort of poisoning that they still haven't really investigated. So I'm kind of curious about that. But so Abigail, or later nicknamed BB, she is the stepmother to Blanche Friedkin, a young princess, our Snow White equivalent. And married to Sabrian Friedkin, who is the king of this kingdom and Blanche's father. Everybody has adorable nicknames. And then, of course, it wouldn't be a Snow White story if we didn't have our magic mirror as well, which is known as Veritas. Their soul is really interesting in the way that it's trapped into the mirror. And I hope we get to see more of that as well as the series goes on.
Yeah, I think Meredith is probably my favorite character. I'm just a sucker for, like, the non-human, like, mascot slash team member. he's like the Scooby-Doo or the Chopper of the group.
Absolutely. And, like, there's one moment in the series where Veritas changes into any different form that you could try to imagine. So whether it's like a little boy, a little girl, adult man, adult woman, or like a sad puppy or something at one point, like anything that they could have transformed into, just to like see what would work for Sabrian to be okay with was hilarious.
Yeah, I think his form as like a young boy is probably the most accurate, because he is only like, isn't he like 2 years old or something?
Yeah, he's very young, and but he's also like very wise and all-knowing, as you would expect a magic mirror to be. But I do think the little boy look is definitely the best one. I think for the first, probably like third, maybe half of the episodes that are out so far, he's like a teenage boy, and then becomes the little boy when Sabrian finds out and gets a little threatened.
Yeah, he looks a little bit like Killua from Hunter x Hunter, to me at least.
There are a few other characters in the series that kind of are reoccurring, but I wouldn't say that they're overly important for us to dwell on too much today.
Yeah.
I do like that, in a huge contrast to our previous episode with ORV, the cast of Not So Wicked Stepmom is very small.
Yeah, thank God.
Yes, it's a lot easier to keep track of. I know... Every time we're reading an episode or a different series, I'm keeping track of like all of the different character names on my phone so I can try to piece everything together. And I was so relieved that this list was quite, quite small. But I do know, as far as like side characters, we will talk about a little bit of the Stoke family, which includes Sabrian's former wife and Karen Stoke, especially. Because they're both kind of more important characters for different elements throughout the story.
I love Karen.
Yeah. Karen, well, we can talk about Karen. What do you love about Karen the most?
She is the kind of like uppity, kind of snarky, but also just upfront noble that I kind of vibe with. It's funny because like, her, my experience with characters like her are like usually in settings outside of like romance fantasy, they're usually just like a typical tsundere. But I don't know, just the way that she was handled was good, because she kind of, well, her relationship with the royal family is like complicated, you know, because Sabrian was married to Miriam, which is that was her sister, right? Or was it?
Yes, she was Karen's older sister.
Okay, good. So correct me if I'm wrong, like the circumstances behind like what happened was like after, can you do me a favor and run by like Sabrian's whole backstory? Because just like there's like the way that the author is juggling like the events that happen in like the royal family surrounding Blanche. And then, like, everyone else kind of just, like, dancing around it. Basically, the way that Karen kind of, like, reacts to the situation and, I guess, to how her family is, like, being perceived and, like, how she wants to be seen in society, like, I think that she had, like, the most realistic, like, way of reacting to everything. And her interactions with Abigail... as she gradually finds out that like, oh, you know what, like she's actually kind of a decent person, and like I was such an asshole, and I come to like regret my actions, and like basically now it's like heavily implied that she's like crushing on Abigail. And she asked her straight up like, oh, how do you feel about women who want to marry women? And
yeah, they're like special friends conversation.
Special friends, yeah. And then they had to explain to Blanche, because she was in the room. They're like, no, not those kind of friends. Oh my god. But I don't know. I just vibe with those kind of like tsundere characters, because okay, if you put a gun to my head and had told me who's the best girl in Evangelion, I would say Mitato. But when I was a kid, I had a crush on Asuka. And like basically like those fiery personality types are like, I think they're fun.
They are fun. Karen is, I like her transformation and how quickly she realizes that Abigail isn't her enemy.
Yes.
And I do like when, I do like her sense of fashion and how quickly that shifts to try to compensate for Abigail's changes in dress styles for the period as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the special relationship that the three of them build later on between Abigail, Blanche, and Karen is really sweet. And it, like, beyond the special friends conversation, it's just adorable, like, seeing them sitting around and actually, like, being there for each other and being supportive.
Yeah, it's, like, genuine camaraderie that they develop.
Well, like you were saying before, I think it's hard to talk about the Stoke family and their circumstances without going into Sabrian's background. And that's a huge part of the series and why, like, at the beginning of the series, I hated Sabrian, and I'm sure most people probably did,
mm-hmm.
until you realize why Sabrian is the way he is. So major spoiler of major trauma in this series and why this is very much a slow burn of a series, because it takes 93 episodes to get a hug, but that's okay. It's okay.
We're getting there.
One step at a time. So Sabrian, or Sable, as we now like to call him, was previously married to Miriam Stoke. Miriam was heavily influenced by the nature and pressure of being a queen, as well as Sabrian's mother, the former queen mother, and just really the pressures of producing an heir for the royal family. But when Sabrian became king, he was only 14 years old. And he was not prepared or knowledgeable about any of that aspect of his life. He wasn't exactly eager to go do anything of that nature and was kind of pressured. He was pressured. And so essentially he was raped by Queen Miriam and resulted in the birth of Blanche, who was a female child and at the time not an heir of the throne, so Queen Miriam just kind of wasted away and died on her own. But Sabrian carried that trauma of being raped with him and created an intense hatred of women. He didn't want to be touched by them or anything like that. Marion, is there anything you want to add to that?
Oh yeah, it was really sad. I was like reading this stuff weekly. I picked up this series, I think, as it was like got picked up initially, and like from the beginning, like just read it weekly. But when we were getting to that point in the story, like you said, like no one really cared about Sabri, or not cared. I would say like everyone was just like waiting for like, okay, well, you need some kind of redemption because you're clearly not like evil, but we know you're going through something. So we wanted like to know what was his deal. And then when this finally happened, like everyone was like, oh shit. But the way that it was handled by the author was very tactful in terms of like the emotional response from like the readers and like how just the way it was like drawn, it didn't feel like exploitative. It was treated with like the level of seriousness that this kind of topic deserves. So for that reason, like everyone was like grateful. And I was too.
I did also appreciate that they made it a point at the chapter where it's revealed, they gave a very distinctive like trigger warning, yeah, and said, like, this is going to happen. But if you're not okay with this, skip forward to the next episode and we will explain what happened. And then in the next episode, they just basically take a couple sentences to say, this is what you missed and you can move on and like be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Tapas is pretty good about stuff like that. Like, usually there'll be content warnings about like stuff involving like sexual assault or suicide and like basically topics that can make a person relapse or go through trauma, so, or relive their trauma, I mean. So that's another reason to read on their platform.
Yeah, absolutely. I do appreciate especially the way that the main character Abigail reacts to finding this out as well. She doesn't shame him in any way. She doesn't continue trying to like reach out to him or touch him in any way that could trigger this at all. She takes a huge step back and also apologizes for past actions, like showing up in his bedroom, trying to fake seduce him at one point, like realizing that was a mistake that she had made because she didn't know about this at the time.
Yeah, I love that too. Yeah, like Abigail is so considerate, and her response is probably what I was most glad to see, because it's so easy to kind of come off as like, oh, you're pitying someone for what they went through, and it doesn't feel like genuine like sympathy or like that you're understanding where they're coming from. But Abigail never belittles him or like treats him differently in like a discriminatory way for it, which I feel is something that a lot of media probably, maybe they won't try to actively go against that, but they won't also make that more obvious. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like the level of tact that was used was spot on.
Yeah, I would agree. And then it's not just a Sabrian's trauma as well. Like, Abigail and the tact surrounding her trauma is also really important. So we haven't really talked much about Blanche, our adorable little darling in this series, but one of the things, actually there's two different things that are Abigail Lily, trauma specific, which would be both food and weight traumas, insecurities and things surrounding that. So at one point, Jeremy Stoke, who was formerly like a teacher or attendant for Blanche, she was trying to pick out dresses for her early on and was just picking horrible things. But she was also very strict about what would make her the most presentable as a noble, most ladylike, and heavily restrictive on what she could eat every day. And Abigail completely flipped both of those on her head, or on their head. And that's how she really kind of started to bond with Blanche, with the firing and reveal that Jeremy was a horrible person. And really just trying to deal with her own trauma and not let that same trauma happen to Blanche, I thought was really important.
Yeah, I think it's great that she was able to look out for Blanche and like make sure that she's not in the position where she gets to be manipulated and like put into situations that could end up like reflecting, or not reflecting, mirroring what Sable went through. Like, she genuinely cares about Blanche as a daughter, and it's really heartwarming, because then it comes through to everyone else, and Blanche is like, when she realizes that, like, oh, she does want to be like my mother, like, she leans into it, and she can finally act her age, which is, that leads into Blanche's character development, where her insecurities and her trauma stem from not having to like basically act more mature than she really is because of how she was ignored by her parents growing up. And now that they have the opportunity to mend this relationship, she gets to actually, you know, act like a kid. And I remember the first moment where she was like whining or like complaining that like she couldn't spend time with Abigail. And it was like, it was so cute because Vivi was like, oh my God, she's grumpy. She's like expressing disinterest. Like, that's a big first step. Because before that, she would just smile and like accept it. But like now that she's comfortable enough to like be willing to protest and like ask for something, it shows like a major shift in her attitude. That like it is okay to voice how you feel and your opinions, because they're gonna be listened to. And that's beautiful. I like that a lot.
Yeah, Blanche's arc is definitely interesting in terms of maturity and her impressionability and everything that she goes through developing these different relationships, going from absolute fear and terror of Abigail to she can't be without her most of the time, and having adorable sleepovers with her and Veritas, as well as going from having a father that never talked to her for all of her life, pretty much, to someone that she has supper with now daily instead of just talking to her 5 minutes every 3 days or something like that. And then like having sleepovers with him as well. So it's a fun dynamic with them and Blanche's development. I think that it made a huge difference when the former queen mother, Sabrian's mother, comes to visit and really tries to manipulate Blanche. I think that that really is like a turning point, because at that point she's like, no, you need to act your age. And by that she means a lot older than she is, and really kind of present yourself as a future wife of this random relative of hers to help a political marriage. And she shouldn't be sleeping in the same bed with her parents, things like that. But Blanche eventually like breaks free of that. And I think it goes to her maturity, and then it also goes to when she like realizes how in the wrong she is at that point. There's a bit of a fine line she walks between what is just fun and what is a more serious thing that she needs to do. And I think in addition to like her maturity and how she wavers at different points, I think it's important that it's not forgotten how lonely Blanche seems to be, but really finds a friend in Veritas in the more recent episodes.
Yeah, totally. And I think the fact that Veritas like form as like a young boy ends up helping both Sable and Blanche to kind of like connect and find someone else new to like talk and interact to, and kind of like not necessarily vent, but to feel comfortable enough to like talk about stuff that maybe they couldn't share with Bibby, or they don't have another friend to really confide in.
Veritas is so good for anyone to just be able to talk to. I like how each of them have a different relationship with them. So like Sabrian is pretty much like anytime Abigail's in trouble or seeing this particular person who's shifty, like, you need to tell me immediately so I can interrupt this. And then Blanche is dealing with her loneliness. And then Lily is kind of, she just needed a friend in this palace when she was all alone, and Veritas was that source of comfort. But then later is also a cursed teacher extraordinaire, which has been a funny development as well.
Yeah, seeing him try to like give romantic advice to Sabrian, and then like he just completely goes over his head. He starts telling people, or Veritas starts telling Sable that, like, yeah, well, okay, if you don't know whether or not you really are in love with Abigail, you should see if you feel differently about her compared to other people. So, like, do you want to hug her? Do you want to, like, spend time with her? And then, so how would you feel about other people? So he goes around, like, hugging, like, all of the men around him, like his secretary, a bunch of other like noblemen in the court and shit. And people were just like,
what? Abigail's brother.
Abigail's brother. And people were just like, what's going on with the king? Like, it's ominous. Like, and then he also teaches Abigail how to use magic, because Bibi finds out that she actually has, is it dark magic? Or... yeah, basically,
yeah,
like the stuff that gets...
I don't know the exact term, but I think it's just dark magic.
Yeah, I think it's what gets people accused as witches, basically, because it's not like an element like fire or water or wind or anything like that. So he tries to, they're like, okay, well, this attribute that you have is very good for evil things, manipulating and like... yeah, it's generally not stuff that normal people would need. And Bibi kind of like she's terrified at first, but she kind of leans into it. She's like, well, maybe I could use this to help Blanche out, like, or make things easier for her. So she tries to learn how to control her power. And yeah, Veritas gives advice, but also, it's cute. It's just Abigail in general, I think, she bounces off well with everyone. And in turn, seeing how Veritas kind of like sees how she reacts to everyone, it kind of informs his decision making when he's talking to either Sabrian or Blanche. Like, he's just like, oh, okay, this is how she handles them. I should probably take a page out of her book.
I like how the series is very good at about, I'd say maybe every 20 or so chapters after the beginning, reminding us that this is a Snow White story and that Abigail is supposed to be like the evil queen. Mm-hmm. Whether it's her creepy grin, like anytime she's smiling, it looks like very wicked and sinister. But after a while, like, we don't really see that because everyone around her is just so used to her face.
Yeah.
But when a new character comes around, like the Queen Mother, they're so like terrified of her smile. Like, are you okay, dear? because they're not used to it. And then when the magic part gets introduced, and Veritas starts teaching her, she realizes, like, one, that this is evil magic. And she's like, of course it'd be evil magic. Why wouldn't it be? And then, like, all the basic curses that he's trying to start her off with to kind of get her proficiency up, they're like, basic curses are all the ones from different fairy tales. So, like, turning a man into a frog and it can only be turned around by a true love's kiss or whatever. Just like, these are all fairy tale hexes and those are basic. What are the horrible hexes? I don't want to do any of this. But it's very good at reminding us about these things. And I think there was something they like brought up about an affinity for apples at one point too, and I'm like, oh no, here we go.
Yeah, that kind of like self-awareness is really funny because it's not the like the wink wink nudge nudge type of referential humor that it's like, hey, look, we went out of our way to do this, you notice, right? It's just kind of like subtly thrown in there. It's not really like dwelt on to like really kill the joke. It's just there and gone. So I appreciate that. If it was done any differently, I would probably have been like, this is way too corny.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think that it's not so much subtle, but like, it's not, like you said, not dwelled on to the point that it ruins the joke.
Exactly.
It's a very,
it doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yes.
Yeah. In general, like, it's just a quaint series, to be honest. I feel like this reminds me a lot of the first series that really got me into like the villainous genre was My Next Life as a Villainous, All Flags Lead to Doom. This one is the one where it's like, yeah, there's like stakes, I guess, but also it kind of leans more on the comedy, and like the drama stuff is there more for like character development. It's not really bogging down like the tone.
Yeah, I would agree. The tone definitely seems to be lighthearted and very much focused on the three of their family dynamic, and then occasionally including Veritas at moments where he's needed. But a lot of it is, like, as you said, lighthearted and humorous, but serious when it needs to be, and it needs to be for the sake of the characters, and it's done very well to develop them and work through their traumas. Well, is there anything else about this series that you really think we should touch on? I know there's still like plenty of things we didn't talk about. I guess one thing I would say is I'm very interested to find out what Gideon McLeod is really up to. He's a very shifty character. That gets introduced as like a music teacher, but that's still very new. And then what's going to happen with all the magic stuff, I'm also very interested to find out.
Yeah.
And I would also add that Sabrian seems a lot more forthcoming now that he's kind of realized his feelings in the last episode, and to the point that Abigail's kind of like, oh no, I'm embarrassed. So I'm kind of curious to see how much further that's going to progress now that he's more self-aware.
Yeah, I want to see more about Gideon, because every time I see like a musician in these kind of stories, I'm like, oh, they're sleazy. They're just there to like seduce women and like stray them. Yeah, Mom. She agrees. But, yeah, I think my favorite part of the story was the part with the did we find out for sure if the poisoning was from, like, arsenic used in the dye? Because for like, the dresses and stuff? Because...
Yeah, for the green dresses.
Yeah, following that weekly, I remember someone in the comments was bringing up, like, it looks like the story might head in this direction. And like, referencing, like, an actual period in history where, like, that was a thing. Like, arsenic poisoning from dyes used in dresses. And I was like, damn. Apparently, I think there's, like, a Netflix documentary on this kind of stuff. So, if I find it, I'll link it in the description when we upload this episode. But that kind of, like, historical context is really cool. It shows, like, a level of research that I respect from authors. Like, one of my favorite stories is Vinland Saga. And hearing about how he visited, or Makoto Yukimura, the creator, how he visited Iceland, Canada, Greenland, and, like, reading stories to, like, just be, like, historically accurate as possible. I think it's cool. It's a effort that a lot of people don't really have to go to, but it makes the series feel more authentic, even though, you know, this is a series that has magic and stuff. The fact that they're still grounded in some form of reality, even if this is, like, a pseudo European medieval fantasy, like, it's cool.
Yeah, I would definitely be interested to see that Netflix documentary if you find it. I'm always interested when, like, historical applications are used in stories accurately, and like you said, it lends an authenticity to the story. Even though this is a very much a fairy tale retelling, it's still an important facet of a historical genre that really brings the story to life more.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's it. In terms of those, like, characters I really want to touch on, I think everyone else is, like, I think we touched the major points. The Queen Mother is, like, let's get this out the way. She's a bitch. Manipulative, evil.
Absolutely.
She just wants political power. I think it's interesting that we're going to see Bibby's family too now. So now that her and Sable are aligned, and they're, like, on the same team, basically. And so is, you know, Blanche also kind of, like, aware of her role as a princess too. I think it's going to be fun seeing the family kind of team up as, like, a, you know, like, do their thing as the royal family and actually put these nobles in their place.
Yeah, well, and I did, especially, actually, that's one thing you reminded me, the way the three of them teamed up a ball, the concept of Blanche getting married, and the way that she wouldn't, they all agreed that she wouldn't be married until she fell in love and she was of age, which is very unheard of for, like, a historical romance plot of that time frame. And something that I really appreciated, kind of very much in the same way that they both voiced support for same-sex relationships. This was a very, like, modern-day concept that I appreciate that they applied to the story.
Oh, for the listeners, can you, because I don't know if you brought it up exactly, but what was the moment where Sable kind of affirmed that about same-sex relationships?
Oh, yes. I don't remember if it was when he was talking to Millard or Veritas, but it was, no, it could have, I don't want to say it wasn't when he was going around hugging everyone. It was much earlier. I want to say it was definitely before Abigail voiced hers, but I don't remember the exact scene, unless you do.
I definitely don't. That's why I was like, oh, damn, that slipped my mind.
Oh, yeah. No, I wish I could remember the exact scene it was. I should have written it down, but I know it was before Abigail more, like, vocally voiced it. It was just kind of like a short, like, there's nothing wrong with this kind of thing. Just like a side comment. It wasn't, they didn't make a big deal out of it like they did with the special relationships thing.
Okay, that's fine. If by any chance you remember, you can just record, like, a little, like, 10-second clip and then send it to me.
All right. Well, I know I already asked, but is there anything else that we still haven't touched on about this series that you wanted to cover for sure?
I think I'm good. I guess I want to hear your thoughts on like where you think the story is heading forward towards, like what's the end goal, or like any events that you feel like should probably happen or that you expect to happen.
Sure. So I do think that I guess I'll just go through with like the main four characters, what I think is going to happen with them. I'll save Abigail for last. But so for Sabrine, I think that he will kind of continue to work through his trauma and take small steps with Abigail. So episode 93, we got a hug. I think he will eventually kind of, now that he's realized his feelings, keep working up and eventually potentially have a child with her. But that would be really long goal. But that would be a huge overcome step for him. And that child wouldn't be the heir. I think that Blanche is still going to be the queen of the kingdom. For Blanche, I think she's really going to grow into her role as a princess. Right now, she seems very studious. And I think she's very determined to kind of be like an asset to the kingdom and really kind of come into her own that way. So I'm excited to see her academic growth in that way. Abigail, I think she's got a lot to work with for her own self traumas as well as realizing her own feelings for Sabrian more defined, I guess, because right now she's like, oh no, he couldn't like me, there's no way. And just because she has such a negative self-image of herself and like the way that she was talking to Veritas and being like, oh well, my friend, that kind of like typical thing there. No, I lost you. Okay. All right. So I hope it got everything of Abigail. But I also wanted to say for Veritas, I think that with this new introduction of magic and the specific relationship, or not so much relationship, but the introduction of Dahlia Zanoff and the different magical artifacts that are in the mage tower or mage area, whatever it's called, that they're going to try to find a way to get him out of the mirror. Or at least like remove his soul from it. And
yeah, that's definitely what I felt was probably his like end story. I think I'm not sure if it'll go here, but I think it's also possible for him and Blanche to maybe get romantically involved. But I don't know if it'll actually happen or not. But it feels like the vibe is there from what I can see with the art. So.
I would agree. They're making a cutesy glances at each other, but it would be a matter of how Veritas looks in a human form outside the mirror, if that's still consistent.
Yeah, I think
I'm excited.
I think if we end up seeing Blanche like grow up as like further than her teens, like as like an actual adult, like maybe her 20s or older, then I would be less icky about it. So. We'll see. I don't know what the scope of the story is, or even if like, because I think this is adapted from a web novel. If the web novel is even finished or not, it might be, but I'm not sure. So I'm going into it blind.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, and I haven't read the web novel either, obviously, but. I would be interested to see if there's going to be like a time skip, because as like. I'm sure you're aware in most Snow White stories, she's very much a young adult. Mm-hmm. And right now the Blanche we have is like 8, 10, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we definitely need to progress time in some way if we're going to get more to that Snow White element.
Do you think she's going to get dwarves, like commoners, like who are, like a team of them who are just like, oh dude, that's our girl, we gotta show up for her.
I mean, I don't think anyone's really going to be against Abigail right now with the way that she's been, but I definitely think that Blanche will have like a good public support just because of how sweet and dedicated she is to the kingdom, it seems. Mm-hmm. I like it how Abigail keeps having this kind of like fear, like, is that the prince? Like anytime some sort of like shifty guy shows up in Blanche's life or proposed shifty guy. Yeah. But she's not asleep yet, so
Mama Bear instincts.
Yes, I love her mama bear instincts, and it's definitely an adorable relationship seeing them together.
Oh, I just realized we didn't talk at all about Raven.
We did not, and actually you're right, that is very important. Please continue.
So there's a character named Duke Raven, who is Sabrine's half-brother that his father had out of wedlock, I think. It was with a mistress, basically. And he's the older brother. I believe technically he was born first. But I think he was like discovered or like picked up at some point when he was still living with his mom. Or was it, did his mom pass away? I don't remember.
Yeah, his mother passed away and he was living like kind of like a commoner and he never knew his father.
Right, okay.
And then he's just told once his mom dies, like, hey, by the way, your father's a king. Come live at the palace now.
Yeah. So basically he's just thrust into this completely unfamiliar environment. And he knows that his younger brother is the legitimate child. So he's being groomed to be the actual successor. And he's kind of just there as like a replacement. And him having to come to terms with that gave him a very complicated relationship with Sable, because his self-worth is basically determined completely on whether or not he'll be able to actually replace Sable when needed. And the way things are, it's like Sable grew up like kind of sickly, not really like active. He didn't seem that competent, I guess, as a successor, and eventually like grew into it through like all the situations thrust on him, and he just had to adapt or die. So that's what he did. And to this day, like, their relationship is like, on the surface, it looks like it's like stable or even pleasant to like the people outside looking in, but there's always tension there. And whenever he shows up, and recently he notices Sable's relationship with Bibi changing, he wants to get to the bottom of that. Like, it's a curious event for him, because he knew that like originally they don't really get along with that. And he eventually finds Abigail like interesting, and like, man, as I was reading these chapters, I'm like, this dude, I know you're kind of going through shit, but like, stay away. Keep like 5 feet away from Abigail at all times, because you're like, you're showing up exactly when like Sable is acknowledging his feelings and like, oh yeah, I might actually be in love with this lady and want to see her happy and all this stuff. But miscommunications and shit like that, at least their relationship isn't so unstable that just like the slightest hint of jealousy will like make everything fall apart. Like, they listen to each other, Sable and Bibi, and they'll ask each other like, do you feel comfortable with this or that? And kind of like, it's like what you were saying with earlier, how Abigail didn't treat Sable any lesser for like his trauma. And she was like considerate. She was paying attention and trying to like adjust accordingly, like not coddle, but also not ignore the other person's feelings and stuff. So I guess in a way it's a good thing Duke Raven showed up, because it kind of made their relationship stronger. But, you know, getting to that point, it was an obstacle at some point.
Yeah, I definitely think that Duke Raven has a definite interest in Abigail that is at least some extent of romantic in nature. And he has a magical affinity, which we didn't really get to talk about. And he creates like a special potion for Abigail that is, honestly, it was like a cleaner that she used on like her dresses or her face to make everything look fresh and new again. And then he also had this like songbird, which gave me like Remarried Empress vibes for a minute, but it actually had a, it could actually like listen in on her. So it was kind of like a spy bird in a way, but she quickly returned it. And then later on, when Sabrine gets really uncomfortable with Duke Raven and his presence in Abigail's life and how he keeps calling on her, I think, if I'm recalling correctly, he had asked her not to be alone with him anymore, and, like, respecting his wishes. She tried to do that, but they were, like, very forceful about her helping him, like, pick out a new outfit, because he liked how she designed an outfit for Sabrian as well. And it became, like, a big point of contention of, like, which black to pick and which one was best, because both of their names mean different versions of the color black. But there was, I don't remember the exact instance, but there was one scene that was really uncomfortable with him and Abigail, and I'm like, dude, you need to step off, because this is just not okay.
Yeah, dude, when the glint in his eye shows up, I'm like, bro, I'm gonna need you to, like, put on some sunglasses or something. Just don't look at me like that.
Yeah, it's just like, take 10 steps back, or, you know, just leave the room. That's cool too.
Go straight to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
Yes, like, you can exist, but not in Abigail Lily's life. Bye.
You know, it would be crazy if...
I'm glad you brought him up, because I completely forgot.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just looking at the notes. But, oh, man, I think what they're doing with him now is, like, it's good, because we're still, like, on the edge of our seats. We don't know if he's, like, is he going to be, like, three-dimensional, or is he just going to be, like a 2D villain? But if it goes, like, the 2D villain route, I hope they lean as hard into it as possible and just make him comically evil. I don't know. I guess it would be not funny, but interesting if maybe he's the one behind Gideon or, like, other suitors for Blanche and, like, trying to separate the family that way. Who knows?
Well, I don't think he has, like, ambitions for the throne from the way that he's been talking. I mean, of course, he could just be putting on a front for everybody that he's interacted with in the main grouping, but he doesn't seem to be very throne ambitious. But he does seem to be motivated towards Abigail specifically.
I get the feeling he might be pushed into a corner at some point, and then that's where that comes in, at least in terms of, like, I don't know. I could see leaps in logic from him, from, like, okay, if I can't have you, I'll just take the country and then take you or something.
Yeah, he looks kind of like the kind of an opportunity Caesar.
Yeah. He looks like the type who would do that.
Yeah, I would agree that he very much seems like he could be an opportunist, but it's definitely still early to tell. I think this story probably has quite a bit left to it. I don't see it ending anytime soon.
I could easily see this being like 300 chapters.
Yeah. Well, I would say also, just kind of like looking at the series as a whole, I think that Abigail is a very relatable character for a lot of women. Trauma about like what women should or shouldn't eat and how they should look and appear for a lot of people is very prevalent in just at least experiences that I've had with me and my friends and other people that I've known growing up. It's something that a lot of women deal with, and it's something that I think is very important how they touch on it in the story. But all of their trauma that they go through is very important, as we've said a few times, and how it's handled is very tactful and very to the point and supportive. And I think that's a really good point about the series that I hope it keeps up as it continues on.
Yeah, I agree. Is there anything else to really touch on? Dahlia. Did we talk about her?
Very briefly. So Dahlia's the magician that
that's right.
Abigail goes to see about like magical artifacts to learn a little bit more about Verdis, and then after that is when she finds about her magical affinity herself.
Is she the one who's like the edgelord? The one who's very Chunibyo?
Yeah, she was like stabbing herself or something.
She's like, I must use blood to activate because this is the life force. And like, she talks like...
Yeah, and Abigail's like, couldn't you just like prick your finger or something, not just cut your arm open?
And then Blanche is like, did you hurt yourself so you can show me magic? And then she's like, no, my lady, I would never hurt myself. I would never put a frown upon your lovely face. And she's just acting all knightly and shit. It's so funny.
She's an absolute treat of a character, and I hope that we get to see a lot more of her going forward.
Same. Honestly, we need more Chunibyos in manhwa. Just give me the cringe fest, like just people like RPing in fucking conversation, like in casual conversation.
I feel like we need to find a series where all the characters are just trying to out cringe each other. I feel like that'd be really funny.
Oh god, that would be crazy. I'll keep an eye out. I'm gonna put the bat signal out to my friend to see if anyone knows.
That really would push it. So we have to rate this. I'm pretty sure I know what we're both gonna rate it because we have a trend and it's okay. Yep. But what would you rate this particular series?
It's a savory bulgogi.
Oh, so we have a qualifier now. It's not just a bulgogi, it's a savory bulgogi. The top of the tier.
Yeah, I'll come up with a new adjective every time.
All right, that's fair. I will agree with the savory bulgogi, and I look forward to our future adjective descriptions.
Yeah, maybe we should have gone with sweet, because it's more tender.
Tender is a good adjective to use as well.
Yeah, melt in your mouth. Just like it melts your heart.
Is this all going to go back to the steak descriptions again?
True. Oh, man.
This is the rare steak.
God.
Oh, man. All right. Well, this has been a fun discussion about Not-So-Wicked Stepmom. Marion, do you have anything that you want to plug or you want to tell us how people can reach you on socials?
Yeah, sure. So I am at Microwavy, the E before the V, on Twitter and also on Instagram. I just made my Instagram public again for the first time in like 6-7 years. But yeah, I'm I don't know. I'm trying to, I guess, build a brand now because I'm actually like a professional now and shit. So I'm just getting all my socials together. But I have a card as well that has like all my links. I recently updated it so that it looks a little nicer and has more of my current projects. It had been like, what was it, since like May that we made the podcast Twitter, but I forgot to link it on my portfolio. So yeah, 6 months later, there we go. I'm also on Blue Sky if you use that. It's Microwavy, but just spelled normally because I was fast enough to get it. But yeah, I think that's it. I can plug in the podcast too, so you don't have to.
Okay, sure, go ahead.
Yeah, and you can follow So Do You Want to Read Manhwa on our socials on Twitter and Instagram at Soju Manhwa Pod. And yeah, like if you like what you're listening to, give us a rating, share the episode, send us an email, sojuwantoreadmanhwa@gmail.com. Maybe you have a suggestion for something to read. Or maybe there's something we covered that you want to talk about. Go ahead. Like, we love to listen to what people are saying. Again, like, I want to thank everyone for all their support and, like sharing the news that we were sharing during Anime NYC and just, like, getting the message out there that, like, webtoons are here, y'all. Manhwa is here and, like, the fans are showing up for it, both in the market and at events. Like, getting Sleepy C over, this was, like, her first event. She had never even, like, met Korean fans before, and this is where she starts. Like, it's a great time to be a fan of Manhwa and comics. So, thanks.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that sentiment, that it's a great time to be a Manhwa fan or webcomic fan. And absolutely reach out to us at our email or our Twitter or Instagram with any of your questions, comments, suggestions. We love to hear them. And then also we have a shiny new Discord. So if anyone wants to join that, hit us up for a link.
Oh, true. Yeah. Invite.
Yeah, it's brand new. We only have a few people in there so far because we just built it. So get on in while it's still nice and new and fresh and early.
True.
We'll post like industry news and new episodes and everything in there.
Build your street cred now.
Yeah, get to know us while we're still small. But if you want to reach out to me specifically, you can find me on most socials at ARG Bombshell or ARG Bombshell. I have a link tree that has like just about any of the links. It's still /ARG Bombshell. And yeah, I think that's about it. I'm in addition to So Do You Want to Read Manhwa, you can also find me occasionally doing video content with Dark Fox from Manga Machinations on the Manga Mac TV YouTube channel. And then I recently, actually the month of this recording, I was in a One Podcast Prevails episode, number 102. It was a lot of fun. So check that
the
out.
The real OPP.
Check it out, especially if you're a fan of Detective Conan / Case Closed. And yeah, I think that's about it for me. Anything else you want to say, Marion?
I forgot. Yes, as I did go to Anime NYC, I was covering it, and I put out stuff on Twitter and IG, but I also have been writing for Comics Beat. One of my first article is already up. It's a recap of the Eyes Press panel, and basically I put those notes to work. I included all the licenses that were announced, a bit of facts about the editors that are working on these series, including Juan, Steven, and Liz. Basically, these are the editors, the people working on getting these new titles out to you in print. And we learned a little bit about them, like how they got into the industry, what do they do exactly, and yeah, just get more familiar with the people who are working on the stuff you love. So I actually connected with Steven, and he's the editor of Omniscient Reader, and also The World After the Fall. So our next series is going to be The World After the Fall. I'm trying to see if Steven can come on, because his boss, Julian, did tell me, like, hey, you should get him. And I'm like, okay, bet, I'll ask. And he was interested. So we'll just see whether our schedules can line up. But yeah, whether or not he can show up remains to be seen. But do look forward to that episode. Yeah, ORV, I'm still thinking about it. Still, oh my god, what a good-ass story. I did
How
read...
How can we not think about it? It's the highlight of every Wednesday.
honestly, yeah. But World After the Fall, I already read like 30 episodes. I'm not as, like, gripped by it, but I do appreciate it. I think that it's structured differently in a way that... the storytelling is like, it feels unique. It feels fresh and like not, even though the tone is pretty similar to ORV, I feel, in terms of like darkness and like hope and like the way that these main characters are like symbols, kind of like All Might from My Hero Academia, where like they just inspire people and that's what is basically gonna save the world. I like that kind of execution. So. Look forward to more thoughts on our next episode.
And, I mean, I don't know how we could talk about ORV and not talk about World After the Fall. So I'm excited to get into it next time, our next episode of So Do You Want to Read Manhwa?
Yeah. So do you want to read Manhwa? We do!
We do.
I need to come up with a better outro. I'll take two shots for that. Oh yeah, actually, like, would you take a shot to this series? I guess, or like four, like, yeah, raise one up.
Pour us a shot of soju. Cheers, indeed.
Cheers. Bye, everyone.
Cheers, indeed.